Fatima Hassan, Director of the Health Justice Initiative. Would you applaud this, Fatima? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So not as yet, because unfortunately both licenses which have been signed with the medicines patent pool still excludes a number of countries, in fact, quite a considerable population in the world. So while the Pfizer contract includes about 95 countries and the Merck contract or license includes about 105 countries, some key jurisdictions are not included. Like entire nations like Brazil, for example, are excluded, and that would require domestic measures and pressures in the absence of the TRIPS waiver. And in the case of South Africa, and we're still trying to establish the full details, in relation to Pfizer, they've only included the South Africa public sector, and for Merck, they've included seemingly both the public and private sector. So that, you know, presents other implications for us here in South Africa as well as for other upper middle income countries as well.
Okay, so some of the public commitments they have made about making the pills widely available in jurisdictions where they can't afford to pay what is going to be the treatment price of several hundred dollars in the US, those commitments, those verbal commitments, have yet to be put into writing and yet to be made credible to people like you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we always say the proof is in the pudding. So once it's authorized for use, once generic companies actually sign the relevant agreements, once there are no prohibitions on sending the active pharmaceutical ingredients to make both of those pills, for example, from a country like India to another country that has the capacity to manufacture it, once it's easier for each licensed territory as well as the unlicensed territory to be able to access it at an affordable level. I mean, some of the current figures are $700 for a 5-day treatment regimen. So, you know, the issue of access and pricing and the ability of all countries everywhere to be able to rely on these licenses is critical. And then the second issue is also that it depends on being in a country that has really good testing capabilities. So, you know, you have to have a diagnostic capability that is expeditious, that provides a quick turnaround so that you can start the treatment at home as well. So there's a lot of factors that we still have to be looking at. The one pill in particular does work better for, or the early data indicates that it works better for pregnant women and that it's more safer. So obviously, you know, all the data will have to be reviewed. Let's see what the WHO does, what the US FDA does, and, you know, finally what SAHPRA, the regulator, will do in South Africa. Just one final point on that, John, is where there's a limitation on the license just for the South Africa public sector, it could mean that if government takes a decision to provide these treatments in using these licenses, you could again have a situation like we have with the vaccine rollout, where the state decides then to be the single procurer to avoid people who are on low-income medical schemes having to pay $700. I mean, I think that would be a fair, justified use of state procurement then.
Yeah, so the private sector does provide that thing which you say is necessary, early diagnosis. One these days, particularly, one's getting results back from PCR tests within 12 to 14 hours. And then it would be up to the private medical schemes as to whether they are going to put these pills on their minimum prescribed benefits list so that the medical aid would pick up the full cost of the pills. And, you know, they might well decide to do that because it's probably cheaper to give you a $700 course of pills than it is to pay for your hospitalization.
Yeah, I mean, with the current rate today at 15.9, yeah, I think it goes to the heart of why these licenses actually have to be non-exclusive and they shouldn't be segregating markets in this way. And this is why the critique of Pfizer and Merck in both respects for both licenses has been that they are still trying to exert control unilaterally, deciding on their own with no rationale to exclude certain territories, to segment markets in domestic context as well, which is going to make it infinitely harder then to be able to get speedy but also affordable access to treatments if they are approved for use.
This is all part of a broader fight, which people like you have been fighting since the very beginning, to get everything to do with the pandemic made much cheaper, to get vaccines licensed to be manufactured with hardly any, if any, patent rights to be granted, and so on. Are there any signs that that battle... You might not be winning the war, but maybe there's a battle or two that you're winning on those fronts?
Look, I think you can see it from, two different ways. The one is that even these partial licenses, we believe, are a response to the request for a TRIPS waiver. And the waiver, remember, covers vaccines, but also treatment and also diagnostic tests, right?
Yeah.
So it's a waiver for all three elements. And this is the very reason why we were saying you can't just have a waiver for vaccines, because there is clinical research into treatment options. Once the treatment comes onto the market, we need to be able to have a relaxation of IP laws so that everyone everywhere can also access the treatment options or treatment regimen. And so the second way to see it is basically that because of the demand for the TRIPS waiver, a lot of these companies outside of the vaccine sort of context are very worried that they won't have control over how these licenses work. So we view them as preemptive licenses to basically take off the pressure or the PR pressure on these particular companies for once the treatment regimens are actually authorized for you. So, depending on whether you're the most optimistic today or the most cynical today, you can see the licenses in one of two ways. But having said that, the licenses are not sufficient because it still puts a lot of power into the hands of Pfizer and Merck. No one has, up until today, and we've been asking for 2 weeks now, to give us the rationale for why certain territories are excluded, which covers a large percentage of the world's population, and so they're not accountable. And, similarly, the MPP has no legal authority. It's not, we didn't elect the MPP. We can't take that agreement to court to set it aside. And that is the problem with voluntary measures, is that it doesn't apply to everybody equally everywhere. And that creates in itself a treatment vacuum, and that these licenses are going to create a treatment vacuum for us in at least half of the world.
Fatima Hassan, please don't give up the fight. Keep fighting. Fatima Hassan, Director of the Health Justice Initiative.